I'm Daniel Bernal, and on this podcast, we talk queerness, astrology, and the intersection of both. In this episode, our guests help us talk about Saturn returns, finding your purpose or your purpose finding you, feeling locked into identity or feeling freed out of identity, imposter syndrome, and pleasure activism. We also take a look at the astrological forecast for the month of September 2019. So sit back and relax because it's queer skies ahead. This is Queer Skies. My name is Daniel Bernal, and I am so excited to be joined by two guests today to help with this episode, and I will let them introduce themselves. They're both together in Chicago. That's the only introduction I'll give.
Welcome to Chicago. Yeah, I'm Drew. I'm Drew. I do astrology in Chicago. I was here last time, so I'll just turn it over to Jordan.
I'm Jordan, Jordan Schomer. I am an intuitive astrologer and cosmic coach and famously a Leo moon. Here with my other favorite Leo moon.
Hey!
happy to be here.
Very happy.
Yes. So my Sagittarius moon is very happy with the fire connection with y'all. And Jordan, you also went to the Great Lakes Astrology Conference with us, which is where we met, and definitely felt the vibe there, like connecting. Mm-hmm. And I'm so excited to have you on this episode, not only to kind of provide some of the insights that you might have about the month ahead, but I just loved hearing about the way that you found astrology or astrology found you. And so I think we'll kind of get started with like just getting to know a little bit more about your background and when you introduce yourself as an intuitive astrologer, what that means. I think that's so cool. And I loved hearing a little bit about it and then like getting to learn more about it the more I stalked you on Instagram and just the more that I've kind of done my own explorations of that. So I would love to kind of start out with that and kind of hear like, what could you kind of tell the story of how you literally like woke up realizing that astrology was meant for you or you were meant for astrology?
Yeah. So I have sort of always been into astrology since I was a kid. I had my first astrology reading at like 15. And my family had an astrologer, and it was always like a medium for me to understand myself in the world. As an Aquarius sun, I have that sort of like outsider mentality, and there was very little in society I felt like really reflected myself. And so astrology was a great outlet for that. I feel like that's how people find it in their own way. But I, have been an actor my whole life since I was a little kid. That has always been my path. And the last 2 years, notably the last like year and a half, it was just becoming really uncomfortable. Like the hustle of being an actor, the day to day, none of it was resonating with me anymore, but I felt very locked into my identity as an actor because I said that that was what I was. That's what I said I was going to do. And then I had my Saturn return. And on December 3rd, my final pass of Saturn, as he was sitting in the sky at 10 degrees of Capricorn, I walked into a building for work as an actor, and I walked out as an astrologer.
It's so amazing. And as someone who's going through my Saturn return right now, it's just like, it hits you like a brick. It's just like, boom, this is what's going on with Saturn. Yeah. And I just think like that you had such a connection to it so early on, but didn't immediately like grab onto it. I think I also identify with a lot. Like I've always been interested in space. And I've been interested in spiritual things. And those things didn't come together mostly because I think I was very skeptical of the whole thing. I was like, there's no way that I can be a Gemini. And then literally a 12th of the population is all this. Like, that's not how things work. And I think it was listening to Rune Soup and Gordon White's podcast when he had Austin Kopic on. As an astrologer, I was like, what is he talking about? This is like layers and like Saturn return. What? Like, what's going on? And it's very much like that process for me too, of like, once I cracked my first astrology, once I hit purchase on like Chris Brennan's book, I was like, okay, this is me now. This is like, I'm never not going to study the stars. Like, that's not an option.
I was also very skeptical, but sort of in a different way. I always felt very connected to astrology. I always felt like it was something, even though it was ethereal, it was something I could wrap my head around. But I just was skeptical that you could be an astrologer. And in the months before I finally pivoted into this work, I was getting messages from people all over. Like my aunt randomly poking her head like from the back seat of the car, being like, you should be an astrologer, out of nowhere. And I'm like, oh, ha, ha, ha. Like people telling me that they were having dreams about me as an astrologer, to which I would laugh. And I was like, people aren't astrologers. And then there was just the most like on brand Saturn in Capricorn moment where I realized all of a sudden that I make the rules for my life, mm-hmm. and I do what I am called to do in this life. And I think both Capricorn and Saturn are very tied to purpose. And it was like, I was finding my purpose was like, I got hit by a train. It was like, I couldn't avoid it if I tried. It was always sort of meant for me. And that day that I walked into a building as an actor and walked out as an astrologer, while I was in that building, I was getting a like channeling reading by my psychic. And I contacted my grandma, who was a psychic herself. And she came through to tell me that I read the stars in a past life and that it was my mission to relearn this information so that I could share it with others and move people closer to themselves. And
so beautiful.
That's been it. Like, it has all been relearning in a way that like I can't understand, but I'm sort of comfortable in the mystery of it all. I followed like spiritual people and like people in the wellness world for many years. And the idea when everyone would say like, oh, I got this download of information. And I was like, I don't know what the fuck that means. Until astrology information just started downloading overnight. And I would wake up understanding things that I didn't the night before. So the whole thing has just been pure magic and I don't have to question it.
It's so interesting where those nudges come from, whether they come from people that you trust already or whether it's like learning to trust different people and different sources. I'm sure that a lot of us who are interested in spiritual stuff inevitably find our way to like spirit guides and like channeling, and like there are so many resources out there for psychic, intuitive gifts and like developing those. And I was going down a path of that and really trying to, you know, figure out if that were, I wanted to believe in it. I wanted to do that. But there was something about my skeptical brain that just kept saying, nope, 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 this is not real. You're making this up. Any channeling you're doing is like your own brain making up what you think you're supposed to be hearing. And I had a couple weird experiences that I don't need to get into now, but eventually the messages that I kept getting were like, it's because you need to study astrology. Like, you need to be able to have something that you're like, I know like brains aren't really left and right sided, but like your logical side or that logical part of you needs to be able to crunch and sink your teeth into it enough so that you can kind of distract yourself and then like really hear the message and interpret what you're needing to hear. And I think like that's the piece that the more I embrace it and the more that I embrace both of those, Gemini, hello, the more they like sync together and the more I have to to play off of. And the more it feels right, I love that you said, like, things just are feeling better and better in that sense.
Right. And those questions and that, like, skepticism of the things that bubble up out of us from a place that, like, we can't comprehend, that resonates for me. Like, I have very loud imposter syndrome, and it creeps in on a regular basis. Pretty much for every reading I do afterwards, I'm like, did I just make that whole thing up? But I think it's this beautiful, like, balancing act between, like, really surrendering to our intuition and keeping us accountable for the way that we are communicating that to people. Mm-hmm. Because there are certain ways of communicating that is not effective for people to, like, hear. And so I think it's this, like, back and forth between making sure that, like, I am honoring what is coming out of me, but also being responsible to the person that I'm sitting across from in a way that is compassionate and empathetic and is of service to them.
There's something that's, a lot of psychics will, work with spirits that really have good intentions, and they have a whole routine of really inviting that energy in. And I think it's the same with astrology. If you aren't intentional, or if you aren't setting that intention for what purpose you have with a client, you run the risk of, like, not really focusing on the message that needs to get across. Mm-hmm. And maybe can more easily get across with some help from that. We're kind of diving into, like, mediumship here a lot, but we're just going to go with the flow of what the conversation is today.
But, like, even when it comes to imposter syndrome, like, I showed up at GLAC with insane imposter syndrome because I come from, like, an intuitive understanding, and I'm doing a mentorship and I'm learning through another astrologer, but the majority of my practice comes from a place that, like, was not of this lifetime. And I'm, like, building on that knowledge, but showing up at GLAC, knowing that there were going to be hundreds of astrologers who have practiced for 30 years and have written books and have read all the books, I was like, who the fuck am I to be here right now? And just meeting both of you and meeting other astrologers, especially the ones, like, our age, was so validating for me. And I feel like my trajectory since GLAC, I've been able to sort of, like, ride that wave of validation. Hello, Leo Moon. And allow it to help me face my imposter syndrome and honor it, acknowledge it, say, I hear you, but we're not doing that right now. And just doing it and, like, moving forward anyway. And I have found the more I'm able to do that, my imposter syndrome has gotten, like, a lot less, like, clever. Like, it's not saying things that I believe anymore. It's just, like, grasping at straws because it comes from a place of fear. And although, like, we all have our own fears and we have our own reservations, like, I'm not allowing that to guide this process because my purpose is too important.
Mm-hmm. What strikes me about that too is, like, I'll speak for myself, but I assume this is true of a lot of queer people, is that we have practice moving into a space authentically against the grain, to say that, and I think that I feel myself moving in similar ways. I won't equate the two because, coming out as an astrologer is simply not the same as coming out as queer. But there is that process of, like, you are fighting the grain. So, like, if you want to be an astrologer, you really got to want to be that. You really have to be able to be in those spaces and reject those messages that might be from imposter syndrome or active acts of exclusion from people who are threatened by new ideas or how the community it forms. I didn't really sense any of that at GLAC. And I think, like, for me also, it was a great first conference experience because of the connections I made, and because it was easy to like, it was also small enough, right? So like, even though we were there with like these big name astrologers, we were literally sitting at their dinner table. and so it was kind of like, I think it was a great space to, as you said, like build up that reserve of like, nope, I've had these experiences. I know that this community has a place for me, and I can carve out my place in here too. Do either of you find that like the way that you represent yourself authentically as an astrologer has roots in queerness or other areas of your life that kind of made that easier or made it harder?
Well, I have a very Aquarian and somewhat unsatisfying view of queerness.
Let's hear it.
It's like, will I get canceled for this? I don't know. I've never believed that like sexuality exists. It's all sort of made up to me, and it's a spectrum. And I think that just like race or class, we have these structures that we've built over time to address things we don't understand and address differences. And I guess I've never come out as queer because I've never seen myself as straight. I've never seen myself as any one thing. And the people who know me best just know to like stay on your toes because I'm going to do something you're not going to expect. So like, anyone who's labeled me as anything, and that has been their thing and not mine. But I found that my sexuality has very much been guided by validation, and I have found myself in relationships, mostly long-term relationships with cishet men, because in our society that was the most validating for me. But that never had an influence on my attraction to all genders, all bodies, all the things. But it's just, to me, one of those things, just like language. It's like it's all made up. Not to say that it's not valid in the world since we've created such structures around it. But like, as an Aquarian, I tend to unsubscribe to the majority of those things anyway. So I just think it's all made up.
So does that change the way that you think about, or does that in any way influence the way that you experience your identity as an astrologer? Because it sounds like you're pushing back against pushing back against queerness as like an identity.
Yeah.
Like a single thing.
Right. I think it's everything and maybe nothing all at once.
So does that relate in any way to how you think about astrology or being an astrologer?
You know, when I think about myself as an astrologer, I think of more of just like the archetype of being aligned with purpose. And like, for me, society wants us to be a cog in the machine. It wants us to adhere to certain standards. It wants us to have certain priorities. And those standards and priorities keep the machine going. I have never given a single fuck about the machine, because I know that it's a broken machine. And I think that people invalidate our profession and the work that we do because it is not of that machine. It does not fit into that machine. And it's threatening to see someone doing something that brings them joy and serves a purpose outside of making money and outside of building status. So I guess so.
I love that. I love everything you said. I think I have no Aquarius placements, and I've got a couple heavy planets in Saturn. Neptune or in Capricorn, Neptune and Saturn. So I definitely experience more of those like societal boundaries and limitations. I feel like my Saturn return was very much like starting to give myself permission to like, fuck that shit. Like to look at society and be like, but why? But like, why does it have to be that way? And then that freedom of choosing to set your own boundaries or to set your own, to expand in the way that you want to be your own mentor. I'm trying to like think about that whole idea of like Saturn in an air sign of Aquarius versus that really grounded, earthy Capricorn. So I think about choosing to be an astrologer authentically is something that is a process I had to go through. Mm-hmm. I had to come out to family, friends, and still get a lot of criticism that like really sets me back in terms of like, am I pursuing the right thing? Is this real? Which is like the stupidest thing. Because I agree, like astrology is a language. It is a language that we've used to capture something we think is true about the universe. But just like any language, it's not going to perfectly express mm-hmm. what you're really getting at. Mm-hmm. It's an imperfect medium for trying to access this thing. And I would say the same thing about like any label that queer people use. Even the label queerness is like not necessarily encompassing everything you need it to at any given time. Appreciate that.
It's funny because the only labels I've ever felt comfortable with were the label as an actor when that was what I was doing and the label of an Aquarius. was just projected on me. And some of those things I held on to for a little bit. Some of them I just kind of let roll off of me. But I have those cap placements too. I have Saturn, Neptune, Uranus, and Venus all in Capricorn. So there was a learning process when it came to understanding where my boundaries are and then shattering them. Because the boundaries that I had going into my Saturn return were ones that lingered from my childhood, ones that lingered from my upbringing, my family, the conditioning, the environment I grew up in. And it just took a giant Saturn-y reality check from an Aquarius point of view to be like, none of this is real.
Yeah.
And that's what actually like makes me feel the most secure. Mm-hmm. Whenever anyone tries to project their societal norms or project their comfort zone on me, I just like take a deep breath and know that like that's their shit. And at the end of the day, none of it is real.
Yeah.
I love that.
I delight in that. I delight in the process of like, this is going to sound really bad. When I see someone struggling inside of that, I always picture Aquarius as like, I think it was Austin Coppock's book actually that talked about like the Deccans of Aquarius as like, it's a walled city and you're on the outside looking in. Mm-hmm. And whenever I see someone who's clearly in the city, they don't know that there's something outside the city. I'm just like, oh, poor you. Like, let's have a conversation about that. But I don't know that you're ready to like see the outside. And there's something weirdly comforting about that, even though it is the position of the outsider.
That makes
but
me think
we're in good company.
I talk to everyone about everything.
Again, can't relate.
Yeah, that's just like I've always sort of been an open book and I have no filter. And I tend to approach topics that make other people uncomfortable with like enthusiasm in a way that they like can't not participate.
We've got this like this Leo Aquarius opposition that both Jordan and I have in our charts is like, we're gonna like try to make you understand something about yourself.
And I've always like, even before I like understood that I was doing this, I've always just like sort of led by example. Like that's the sort of leader that I am, is just like, come along with me. You don't have to, but it will totally be better if you do. In like guiding people or helping people through just like trying to be the most authentic version of myself, which has evolved and changed over time as I learn myself a little bit better or like experience life a little bit more. But like, for example, I was just visiting my grandparents in Connecticut, and they totally assume that I'm a straight woman. They have no reason to assume otherwise. And I'm having a conversation with my like 89-year-old grandpa. And I was like, well, I went on a date with this girl. And he was like, what?
And I can't have heard that right.
I was like, yeah. Like, what's the big deal? And then just carried on with the conversation. He like took a second to be like, okay. But because I lead by example and I have that like Uranian Aquarian part of me, I will just continue to shock people into like getting on board.
It's a shamelessness, I guess. Like if you just go for it. Like, what's somebody going to say? Like, they're either going to go with it or they're not going to go with it. And they're not going to go with it. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I don't care. Like, yeah. You're missing out on fun.
Well, and that's such a beautiful perspective. And I think not everyone shares that. You know, you mentioned, like, will I get canceled for this perspective? We could do a whole series about cancel culture. And I think what I wanted to say mostly about that is, there's definitely an identity, a politics of identity, mm-hmm. that we are all being used for one way or another. And to be able to be able to take power and use that to affect change that actually helps protect people is super important. And that's not how we live our individual daily lives. And there seems to always be in the queer community this like minority of people who are left out of that. And I think that's such an interesting thing that I think about sometimes, is that idea that like, because we use these labels or because it's really a politic kind of thing, it's a political kind of thing. How are we actually able to like live our lives the way we want to? And I don't think there's a good answer. I just think like these are topics that like are super interesting to think about from a lens of Aquarius, a lens of Uranus, a lens of Saturn. Probably Chiron is somewhere in there too to think about whenever we're talking about Saturn or Uranus. But so yeah, I think like that's, I'm not going to cancel you for that because I agree. I agree that like labels are insufficient.
Yeah. And like, that is my prerogative and that's always been my viewpoint. And that I think is why I feel shameless and unapologetic about just being myself. Cause I haven't thought about my sexuality much. I've just been attracted to whoever I've been attracted to. And I've always felt fine with that. But that is a privilege I have. And I will not invalidate anyone's struggle with their queerness based on where they've come from. Or, I mean, if there are countries in the world that queer people experience violence and threat of death, and I would never take away the validity of the danger that comes with being a queer person. But from my very zoomed out Aquarian position, we are all just playing out within these structures that were built. They were not here when we came here. We are not like, that's not an innate part of us. It is what we've been conditioned to believe. And I'm trying to really step back from my conditioning and see beyond the bounds of what society's put up for us in order to operate more freely. That's always my aim, is to feel free. Free to be authentic.
Pausing the episode for a bit, we did get quite carried away with some very exciting topics, but in order to make sure that we could actually get to the September forecast, I am going to save the rest of our great conversation for a mini episode to be released later this month. So stay tuned for that. Subscribe on YouTube or on Apple Podcasts or wherever you are catching this episode for more conversation between the three of us. But for now, let's take a look at the September forecast. So I think we should transition to the forecast. I think in the emergent strategy spirit, like, I don't want us to feel like we have to go linearly through the month. But that might be the easiest thing to start with is, like, what's going on next week? We're recording this on August 28th, so.
Do we want to start with the new moon? I mean, I know that's, like...
We still have a little of that new moon energy lingering on the 1st. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we talked about this new moon in the first episode. So what did we say about that?
Damned if I know.
I remember talking more about last month's full moon.
One thing that I remember saying was about Venus being square to Jupiter and it being kind of nice to have the benefics touching. And then getting into the opposition with Neptune, which rang a bell for me when Jordan was talking earlier about her journey coming into astrology and finding comfort in the mystery or mm-hmm. getting to be comfortable in the mystery. Mm-hmm. That was a phrase that really pinged off sort of the whole vibe for this month with the T-square between Virgo, Sagittarius, and Pisces with Neptune over there. I feel like because Virgo's not the most comfortable energy, or it doesn't find comfort very easily. Mm-hmm. I think that mysterious and visionary sensation, or the way that you can go out and anything could happen, Virgo coming in and either cleaning that up or maybe learning to dream a little bit. Yeah, that's like what I'm getting from the new moon and just like all of the Virgo that we're having.
So much Virgo.
And I remember too, we talked about it's very trine to Uranus, the new moon, and pretty closely conjunct Mars and Venus too, like that conjunction that just happened. So I feel like those are some of the themes or stories that are carried through from what has just been happening with the Uranus station and the Mars and Venus reconnecting. Mm-hmm. I think it sets a tone for September that's about the Uranus dynamics, and we talked a lot about that, but also there's all this activity happening with Mars and Venus, both being in the same sign, finally catching up. And there's a whole lot of drama that happens during the first 2 weeks because of the whole Virgo busyness. So yeah, let's maybe, is there anything more you wanted to say about that?
I think because I do a lot of like moon rituals and that's sort of my, that was my like, coming out in astrology was like hosting moon rituals. And so the ideas and themes as far as things to investigate internally when it comes to all of this Virgo energy and this Virgo new moon is very much about like tying up loose ends and efficiency and cleaning up the day to day and like sitting with yourself and taking inventory of like how you're spending like the minutes of your day. And doing whatever you can before the equinox, before we move into Libra season, to honor the like meticulous details of whether it's like cleaning up after eclipse season or just like having to like reel it in a little bit after Leo season, just like making everything nice and clean and how to maintain some sense of like efficiency from moment to moment.
I love that too, because if you're not in that mindset going into September, you will quickly feel the like push and pull of everything that's going on.
So oppressed by Virgo season, it's not cute.
Said Leo Aquarius.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in general, Virgos can't stand me, but I just like, it's like, get your shit together energy. And I'm like, I don't want to, but we have to. So using this energy, leveraging the attention to details, and all of the very like intellectual, but earthly, like energy in a way that you can make your days and weeks work best for you.
And there's going to be a whole lot of, I think like Daniel was alluding to at the beginning of the month, a whole lot of activity just like pew, 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 pinging off at the very beginning. Like with Mars and Mercury doing their little thing with the sun in the first few days. How exactly does that go? We have Mars and the sun first, right? We have the Mars. Yep. Sun. We have this Mars and Sun conjunct, Cassini.
On the second.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then Mercury swoops in as the ruler of the sign. So like very dignified, very powerful. Is conjunct Mars and then is immediately Cassini the Sun. So it feels like grabbing onto some of those details, mm-hmm. that you feel like in your bones, that you like feel motivated to achieve and actually like understanding them. And then getting the insight when Mercury is then conjunct the sun. So there's like this really like dynamic ping, ping, ping.
Yeah, well, and because this like Mars becomes conjunct with the sun, there's a great opportunity to like energize and act on the projects or the things that you're aiming to do that are really in line with you, how you view yourself and you, the essence of who you are. And it's a really great time to sort of like think big and brave and use courage. And then once Mercury sort of makes that conjunction as well, it's like the like wires sort of connect. And maybe you can see things in a way that you hadn't seen them before. And I think that theme continues to come up a little bit with the Jupiter-Neptune square as well, which will reveal things and dissolve delusions and that sort of thing. But,
delusions too, yeah.
Yeah, delusions as well. but there, I feel like there's a lot of like opportunities to like find new facts and figures.
And we talked last month about right before all of that happens, Mercury makes the trine to Uranus. And because it went retrograde, almost hitting it last time, and then had to go back. Like, this is very validating, but it's also like, oh, and I oop, like, Uranus. Whoa, so this is Uranus, cool. And then like ping, ping, ping. It's just...
Can we dig into that trine more? So I have, I don't know if this is like a story per se, but I do remember the Mercury station retrograde conjunct Uranus and just all that early Leo stuff that was the early Leo season when it was square to Uranus. Wow, that was eruptive, tense, like lots of things that like could not be said but wanted to be said and vice versa. And now with the trine to Uranus, just me with like Venus and Mars making that trine to begin with, and then we're gonna have Mercury coming up. Like there's just some like a greater ease and freedom coming in, like more willingness to experiment, I guess. Like the experimentation just kind of is flowing. So with the Mercury trine, I think that's gonna be especially powerful because it's in its own sign, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, and during that station too, Mercury and Mars were conjunct, and Mercury and Mars have had two conjunctions now, and this one in early September will be the third and final one. Right. And so we're really getting that resolution of that tension. And not to say that everything is perfect and the way that like it you want it to be, but it's definitely, you're like free from the tension. And so like it's going somewhere. Where that is, not sure, because then the next day, Venus opposes Neptune. And Venus has been kind of the canary in the coal mine of Virgo. Venus went into Virgo first, and then all the other planets kind of like Scooby-Doo behind. Venus reaching that Neptune opposition is all but like, oh, this is weird. I didn't know this would be here. And so it very much feels like the moment you feel any kind of resolved this month, it's like, but what about this? But what about that? And definitely sets a different tone for what each of the other planets is going to successively encounter with that Neptune opposition.
Mm-hmm. It's so cool with all of the outer planets and, well, all of the outer planets, like Uranus and Saturn in Earth signs, making the trine to Virgo by sign, and like they hit Uranus first and then they hit Saturn later. And then right after they hit Saturn, they're squaring Jupiter. And then right after they square Jupiter, they oppose Neptune. So it's like you go from like the shakeup with Uranus, then you have the, oh, maybe I can do something with this, with the trine to Saturn. Mm-hmm. And then you go to, but what the hell is it anyway? Like you get the T-square.
Yeah. Like, but I feel like that, that sequencing of events, really, if you're able to like be present and leverage that energy, will allow you to create innovative structures and make use of like that eclectic, otherworldly, alien like energy of Uranus, and think in a way that is maybe not like your natural state of thinking, coming up with ideas that are forward thinking and innovative. And then when Saturn, you come around to Saturn, it's like, oh, we can make use of this. We can like infuse purpose into this. And then Neptune allows you to elevate that. And like, because that's how I feel like Neptune operates in its like most ideal way, is that it brings elevation and enlightenment in a way that like I don't know where else in the sky quite does that. Mm-hmm. It like bridges the gaps and allows us to see our piece of a larger puzzle and how that fits into the whole holistic view of things. Yeah.
You said purpose to do with Saturn, but I wonder if there's a way also in which like the purpose of Saturn like is syncing up with the purpose of Jupiter and Neptune in a way, because those two planets also have to do with purpose, especially when they're in sign. It's just like a different kind of purpose. Mm-hmm. And because Jupiter, we were talking about Jupiter and Saturn being only one sign apart where they can't see each other, this trine from Virgo to Saturn is like actually helping Saturn get in touch with Jupiter in a way, because the Virgo stuff is aspecting both of them very strongly. Mm-hmm. This is another Gemini Brett thing with the magic square. The magic square.
God.
Thanks for that. But it's true. There's a purpose, something about purpose happening.
Well, and because if it starts with Uranus, that's authenticity. Mm-hmm. Like, and unapologetic, shameless, sheer authenticity. So it's like we are being stripped bare in a way and having to see things in a new way, unburdened by those like limitations we've put on ourselves. And then we are able to like build on top of that, infusing purpose along the way.
And this is what the thing was the whole time, is another theme that comes up for me, because I'm starting to hear this like a symphony. We've got the first 2 weeks really crunchy, like pop, 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 pop. But then when the full moon, I'm going to like combine a few things we haven't talked about. The full moon on the 13th is in Pisces. And so it takes that Neptune, maybe you weren't feeling elevated, or maybe you were feeling a different kind of elevation because you had to escape some of the bad Neptune feelings. But however that is illuminated for you in that full moon, within about the next week or so, we get Saturn direct. So that station that finally is going to bring it out of Capricorn for a little bit. And then we get the third and final Jupiter-Neptune square before Jupiter goes and leaves Sagittarius. And so it definitely feels like this climax of all three of those themes with these like little planets bouncing around and like pulling it out until all of a sudden it's an avalanche and it just all goes. So by that third week of September, if you don't know what the first 2 weeks were about, like you're not paying attention. It's kind of how I feel. Jupiter is definitely in the overcoming position of that square. So it is going to emerge victorious and really push Neptune towards that positive side, that benefic side mm-hmm. of evolution and seeking a new, you know, floating to a new position that it wasn't in before.
That full moon is a doozy because it's close enough to Neptune. It's opposite Mars and square Jupiter. I don't know how to feel about the Mars part, but everything else is just like super like otherworldly. Like charged. how can we go there together?
Mm-hmm.
And then the Mars being like,
we can't.
Well, we can't, or like, we're going to do it like really, really hard. Yeah. We're going to go like really hard. Fast.
Yeah. The other thing that's happening around that time too is the Mercury-Venus conjunction. And then they both like hand in hand go into Libra. And so like, however crunchy that moon is, you've still got that Venus going into her own sign of Libra. And Mercury announcing that to the heavens. And so that's like, I drew a big line between those events because it's like the busy, chaotic orchestra playing and then like, you know what's coming next. Yeah. And it's all good.
I'm interested to see how the full moon feels because like feeling into it from this vantage point, from where we are now, I actually feel like it might be a sort of welcomed break from all of this like very meticulous Virgo energy that's happening and to have a space to acknowledge our emotionality and acknowledge our like interconnectedness. I think that will open us up to what's coming for the rest of the month. And I think our superpower during that full moon, since Neptune, Pisces are both highly creative energy, but then we have still this Virgo energy is writing and like using our creative expression and just seeing where that guides us. I feel like that is the potential to unlock our deepest wisdom about how to navigate moving into Libra season and the fall equinox in a way that sort of strikes a balance between the practical and the emotional.
I agree. And with Libra season comes this like second climax that you've also been waiting for a while, which is the final South Node Saturn conjunction. And I've heard a lot of astrologers really agree that like the feeling of Saturn South Node is letting go. And the Libra new moon happens on the same day. And there's a Venus-Jupiter sextile happening at the same time. So there's just like some beautiful stuff happening coinciding with that final release. And I really do think that if Virgo season was about things cooling down so you could put them back together, Libra season is like, and here's the harmony that happens when they're together, and there's beauty in letting things go. There's beauty in feeling the peace that comes with that, and there's beauty in allowing space for new growth too. But it's an act. You have to actively embrace that in order to get that quality. Well,
and I love that we have all of these beautiful aspects supporting us to do the scary work, because Saturn is fear. Our South Node holds our fears as well. And so there's a lot of courage and like self-love that needs to be employed and able in order for us to do the letting go and do the like real release that we need, and not just a surface release, but like being presented with the reality of our situation, with it being Saturn and seeing things for what they are and choosing to let go of oftentimes things that kept us comfortable and kept us safe, but inevitably kept us small. And so it is an act that we have to grant ourselves in order to give the go-ahead for our evolution of self.
I feel like Libra also, like, evolution of self, and then Libra bringing in the other for sure. What Daniel's pointing out with the sextile between Venus and Jupiter, that's happening right as Venus is starting to become visible in the night sky, right after sunset. So, oh, that's just, she's welcoming in the night for the first time. She's welcoming in this nighttime in traditional astrology. Was obviously ruled by the moon, and the moon is the body, whereas the sun during the day is the mind and the intellect. So Venus coming out finally from underneath the sun, where she's like processing, and she's been in Virgo processing these, like, the experiences that she had in as a morning star, and welcoming the day, welcoming the intellect, and now retreating back to where you can be in your body, where your pleasure is. Where your pleasure is more rooted, and also focused on others, and how the vibrations like bring you up to be with others.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's just so beautiful that all of these things are happening at the same time, and we're finally getting the Venus that we've been waiting for.
I love her. But I think that it also speaks to the nature of Libra, that we are being gifted with this balancing act of energy. We are being supported by the sextile while we are doing the work of the conjunction. And I think that that is so on brand for Libra. And ideally, it's that same sort of like releasing for ourselves will in turn provide some sort of releasing to something outside of ourselves, and that in exchange that Libra so deeply covets.
So to tie together everything you just said and our conversations earlier, if you haven't, I feel like I'm just plugging all my favorite authors and astrologers. Adrienne Marie Brown, who we talked about last episode, has a book, Pleasure Activism, that if that's not about Libra letting go of things that like Venus embracing, then I don't know what is. And I think she does an amazing job in this book too of tackling some of the politics of liberation, and like addresses things about the way we are engaging with each other. The whole premise of the book is, why can't we make liberation and activism the most pleasurable experience that we have? And then when you embrace that, your mind just like blows up with like the possibilities. So definitely September book club month is Pleasure Activism. Get your copy, read it by the 28th when the new moon happens, so you can do the ritual of cementing that knowledge. Don't cement it. Always keep an open mind, but like embodying it, fully integrating it. I think that if I hadn't embraced those things in the middle of all of this, I don't know that I would be where I am now. And so like a lot of what I've read in the book, I know is going to come to fruition, mm-hmm. In this time frame, and just like feels like exactly what the squiggles look like to me when I look at my charts. I'm like, yeah, this is how that feels, is this book.
I love that.
Cool. Did we have anything else to say? We covered a lot.
I about September.
Well, I mean, that's the 28th, so that's pretty much the end. Oh! I just realized I'm seeing Lizzo on the full moon.
What?
Talk about pleasure activism. Oh!
Literally goddess of pleasure activism, Lizzo.
This was meant to be, because on our first podcast, on our first video, Daniel and I talked about Lizzo. That was like our first video together.
Full circle.
Yeah.
Full circle.
Wow, that is so beautiful, because literally that everything you said about like writing and like beautiful expression, power and magic and all of the things.
Well, and I think that with that, the energy of that, that full moon, or, oh no, that's the Libra new moon, but the energy of the Pisces full moon, is all about like tapping into our deepest wisdom that only our creativity can kind of like pull out of it, especially during Virgo season. Like I feel like our creative expression and writing it out, like tangibly being able to put pen to paper, is going to produce the like that sort of like inner wisdom that you can't conjure from your intellect. It just doesn't go there.
Yeah. There's something so amazing about getting it out, to make room for like what's next. It's like the limitations of working memory, you know, like you can only hold a few things at a time. So if you get it out on paper, then you can feel like, okay, the next thing can come into my brain now. Oh, that's cool.
Saturn South Node right there, like making space, right? Making space for the new and then, oh yeah, that's totally this month.
Yeah.
I feel good about how we tackled that, knowing that like we did not cover every single thing, but there's definitely the patterns that you can see just like reverberating around the different planets and the different waves of aspects and conjunctions and oppositions that they make.
Picking up speed.
Yep.
Yeah, like August. I think Daniel and I talked a little bit before. Before airing, like August was about healing, right? Like healing the wounds of the pain of July.
Right? Too real.
Like July.
I don't know her. July.
I don't know. Yeah, let's cancel July.
Month that shall remain nameless. Pain. August healing. September. Like
cultivating.
And potential.
Yes.
So much potential. For the rest of the year, and then we get to enjoy all of Jupiter and Sagittarius until next time.
Yeah, but it's like it's also that potential and building of energy in order for us to do that ultimate release and really make space and make room for things that align more authentically with our purpose. Yes.
And I feel like those seeds are going to be collected during the last few like Cancer Capricorn eclipses too. Yeah. So like we'll see some of this stuff start to really go to the other side, and then we'll be harvesting for a while, like until the nodes exit these two signs in a way that I think July the name the month who shall not be named didn't allow us to feel that like that that we were harvesting or even planting necessarily. It just kind of felt
arid, like, and then waterlogged. Like waterlogged and then arid. Like nothing can be, we can't work with these circumstances.
Yes. Nothing will grow here. Starvation. It's fine. It's almost September. We're good.
Well, and the thing that I, even before I had it validated by astrology, I always had an understanding that like the only thing we can truly count on is change. So if things are really rough right now, that will change. Also, if things are really great right now, that will also change. So just like being present for what's happening now and not expecting that to be the case forever. Mm-hmm. And so opening yourself up to the shifting and evolving and changing of things. And there's an ebb and flow of that. Sometimes it's great. Sometimes it's not.
Oh, so beautiful. What a great, I think we can't say anything more than that. That's beautiful.
Well, we could, Daniel.
I mean, I totally
are you telling
could.
Us to shut up?
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
You want the Leos to
I've
stop
talking? I've got hours more.
No, stop.
I'm full of content.
Yeah, we've got it all coming.
We are content creators.
This concludes the introduction.
That no, was the introduction. Like,
monsters.
Jordan, I am so happy with the conversation that we had. Thank you so much.
This was amazing. Yeah. And also still very validating for me as the intuitive astrologer who's like, do I know things? I do. We all know things.
Jordan is excellent.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you both. I always appreciate getting to talk astrology and starting to put it out there for other people to consume is also really cool. If people want to find out more about you, Jordan, I can share in the show notes some things, but what is the best, what do you have like that you just would love people to start to explore and discover?
Currently, the best way to find my content is Instagram. I really come alive on Instagram, but a lot of other platforms are in the works, website. I contribute to an astrology blog called Soul Astrology. It's members only, but it's like 111 a year with amazing astrology content, all very like holistic and intuitive focus. So stuff that you can really like put into practice and doesn't necessarily go over your head. But yeah, astrology mostly on Instagram, Jordan Chaumaire. I am starting a series of reality TV recaps through the lens of astrology. So,
I saw someone posting about that and I was like, where?
All of my reality TV friends, stay tuned because that's my passion project.
I will sip the tea with you. That will be so amazing. I can't wait for that.
To find out more about that, like we'll just leave it as a teaser. I'm sure there's so many things. Yeah, I want to ask a lot of questions now, but we're gonna go and watch reality TV.
Just like last episode, I will put ways to contact Drew and me for our content in the show notes. The only other thing I'd say is like, does anyone have events or classes that they wanted to plug?
Not yet.
Not right now.
I know some of us have some things in the works, but you'll have to subscribe to this podcast. Or if you're watching on YouTube, subscribe to my channel for more updates. Thank you for listening and watching. And we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.